that as well, because you're changing your relationship with fear is also working on your relationship with anxiety. And yes, you've got anxiety. Everyone out there listening, whether you like it or not, you do. Again, that's why you're live.
Disclaimer time. This is where I tell everyone to lighten up. It's just a podcast. Trading is like that roller coaster at the amusement park. Thrilling, unpredictable, and potentially stomach churning. What works for one person might leave another clutching their hat in the wind. Our hosts and guests, they're awesome, knowledgeable, full of insights, but we're not financial advisors. So don't rush to make any investment decisions based solely on our banter. Always consult with a professional or do your own research. Plus, let's face it, we like to have fun, laugh, enjoy the trading ride together. It's all in the name of good podcasting fun. So remember, take it easy, don't bet the farm, and keep your seatbelts on at all times. Thank you for listening. Oh, I've got to ask, are we going to have homework? Yeah. Ah, dang, I love homework.
You want homework?
I like homework. If we're going to do months between them, we could probably do a little.
I'm sure I can come up with something during our discussion.
Right. Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Trading Endgame, our newest mini-series with sound performance psychology's Sean Sawyer that's unlocking all of the trading emotions. We are going to be taking a deep look into the major emotions around trading in an attempt to better understand exactly what they're trying to protect us from. Now, before we get started, quick reminder to everybody that they can listen in to these recordings live in Sean's private but free Discord. We'll also be pulling questions from the Q&A portion from all you dedicated souls listening in, so please post them as you think of them. We'll make sure they get answered before we cut the cameras. Now, Sean, if people want to join to listen in, how are we doing that? They just got to message you, or... I've been telling everyone just DM you privately or me for access to the Discord. Is that?
Yes. Is there,
okay.
Yeah. When I tweeted out, I just said, you know how to get a hold of me. So I've gotten some emails. I get some, you know, messages, some texts. So for you, yeah, that's how. Okay. If you've worked with me, if you've completed the workshop or you've worked with me one-on-one, just it's all, you know, come on in.
You got a new 6-week workshop starting on.
Yeah. So I've got a workshop coming up. Go to soundperformancepsychology.com. We will be going through all this stuff and more.
If anybody wants to know more, then go to soundperformancepsychology.com. I'll make sure I have links for that so you can just sign up directly there. All right, and then last thing I'll say for promotions, and we'll get that done, is if you enjoy the conversation we have today, I highly encourage everyone to check out soundperformancepsychology.com because there is a ton of material there that'll keep you busy to our next recording. Now, Sean, you want to kind of give a little explanation on how we're kind of structuring these episodes? Because I believe we're trying to take this from a different approach than I think most people look at the emotions. We're not looking at this from like a control and domineering side of things. That's definitely not your style.
No. We are structuring these episodes in a way to view emotions from a functional perspective. What they do for us, both that is effective and ineffective for trading. What they do for us that's both effective and ineffective in life, and hopefully start to help people create a new relationship with these emotions. And I chose the 6 that we're going to be focusing on through the series because they're what I'm bumping into the most with people I work with individually, and what I hear a lot of questions about in, you know, workshops and group coaching and whatnot.
Okay. So I'm guessing then probably fear was the number one. That's probably why we're starting with this one.
Fear is at the top of the list. Yes. A part of what we're talking about today, this fear, I'm going to talk about it in a relatively broad way because where your fear comes from is going to be very different. You know, your FOMO isn't different than my FOMO. My F is different than your F.
Right. Right.
So I'm going to answer it. I'm going to keep today and all these answers as much as I can in the context of that neurobiological, psychological processes that are going on intraday for all of us. So, you know, what triggered it is going to be very different based on our lives, based on our experiences, based on our hardwiring.
I mean, that's something that I think I've been dealing with quite a bit, and I've actually written down some personal examples here should we need them later. But I think one of the interesting things that I wanted to start with, though, is how fear like helps us, because I think that's one of the things that people skip over a lot when they talk about fear. Is it's not all bad, right?
No. If you are listening to this recording right now, you are listening to it because fear. So thank it.
Really?
Because it's why you're alive.
Period. Yes.
It's why you're alive. You'd be dead without it. a lot of people take that negative view and they talk about, you know, how fearful trading or fear is the biggest thing they see in trading issues. And, you know, it's certainly up there, but if you don't understand its full function, its full power, mm-hmm. you're not going to change it enough to have it decrease its impact on your trading.
Gotcha.
You know, you're never going to eliminate it. It's always going to be there because you need it to be. Like I said, you're alive. Thank it.
I think one of the biggest struggles for me has been just trying to figure out what exactly it is I'm afraid of. And like, I think in order to even get to that point, to be able to even ask that question, like you got to build a different type of awareness. So I don't know, maybe that's where we need to start.
Sure. That sounds good. I think that's a really good point. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you've heard me talk, you've heard me talk about mindfulness. So
right.
That's going to be the best way, in my opinion, to work on your relationship with fear. Although there are definitely other ways. I mean, you know, whether it's they're spiritual or whether they are, you know, through exposure, life experiences, a lot of ways to deal with it. But the mindfulness practices, the, you know, for traders, for trader talk, the in the zone practices to work on how you relate to trading are going to be the most fruitful because you're never going to control it or stop it or, you know, dominate it in your mind vice, despite whatever you've been told that ain't happening. So when you understand its upsides, you hate it. You tend to dislike its downsides more. If that makes sense. I mean, it's like, you know, it's like a friend you don't like and then you realize, wow, this person's kind of great. Or, you know, it's a friend you didn't think much of and, you know, you grow closer and you're like, wow, this person's so helpful, even though sometimes they're a pain in my ass. I would kind of relate it to that. to that. I would think most people can probably relate to that.
I think so. I think we have that know-it-all friend that, like, damn it, he's right again.
Yeah, there's that type of just, right. You know, whatever it is that makes you uncomfortable, that you tend to judge, whether it's judging yourself or others, you know, and what happened, you know, what I just described there is a relationship that had changed. And that's exactly what people need to do with anger.
It's interesting that you kind of, it seems like you've kind of personified fear a little bit. I don't know if that's something that you meant to do there, right? You kind of gave it some personal characteristics almost.
Tell me what you mean.
You kind of gave him, I mean, you said that he's like an old friend to start with. You said he's got some you kind of gave him some characteristics or some.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good question. You do. And the reason for that is because you need to build part of building that relationship is identifying them. And, you know, I can't tell you how many times during a one-on-one session or something I've emailed someone, you know, my emotion wheel and how many times I've seen people's eyes roll or them stop, you know, catching themselves in an eye roll. And then, you know, weeks later, they're like, the thing's printed out on their desk and they're using it all the time because, you know, it's incredibly important to paint the picture of what your fear looks like. You know, if you can, I like visuals. So like, you know, if there's two of me in a room and one of them is pissed and one of them isn't, how do I tell them apart?
Right.
And that's a serious question. You got to start thinking about yourself. And that might be the way you feel. It might be a look on their face. It might be the clothes that they're wearing. It could, you know, whatever. Visually distinguish, you know, how can I tell I'm angry? And then of course it's, you know, the result of the mindfulness work, the result of the mindfulness work where, you know, you know that when you're, you know, your brow is furrowed, you know, your forearms might have some tension or your hands, your skin's a little flushed, your heart rate's up, maybe your jaw's tight. And it doesn't have to be any of those by any means. And if it is all of them, definitely got to work on that. But it's those things that you know that friend is walking in the room when you can identify that stuff.
Right.
That formerly annoying friend you're working on the relationship with, you need to be able to know when they walk in the room. And you'll know, one, by what they look like, and two, by what they feel like. And coming up with some kind of label is good too. Like even a unique name for it. That's something that is a, you know, an established part of it.
Fearful Freddy or.
Yeah, exactly. That's, you know, you're into, so you are familiar with the internal family systems model, mm-hmm. You know, those are different parts of you walking in the room.
Right.
You know, and the more familiar you are, the more you can know. And if you're like, all right, I know that I'm scared, you know, then you can have some choices to make. And again, you know, along the lines of more benefits to fear, you know, you got to remember fears actually can be very beneficial for decision making. Mm-hmm. The difference is there's fear when you're in fight, flight, or freeze, and there's fear when you're not in fight, flight, or freeze. You can have fear and not be in fight, flight, or freeze. It's not synonymous. It is a common activation for it,
right?
But it is not synonymous because there's that subtle fear that I mentioned in the beginning that is really functional, the fear that makes you drive on the right side of the road so you don't die. Most people aren't in their car scared and sticking to the right side of the road. They're just doing it. Mm-hmm. But it is fear. You know, it's your, you know, some people might get cutesy and call it a life force or something, whatever. Like, that is part of fear. Hmm. Life force is not wanting to die. It's the force of life. It's the, you know, they have a correlation.
It's the fear of what happens when you break the rules that keeps you from straying outside of them. Like, I don't speed because I don't want to get pulled over. Not necessarily because I'm afraid of what'll happen, but even just the hassle of being pulled over is enough for me to be afraid of, quote unquote.
Exactly.
You mentioned the motion wheel that you have, and I was actually looking at that the other day. I noticed a tinge of fear when I pulled that up, when I thought about how many of these that I've experienced, and I was like, man, I really hope that this is a common experience from other people. It's like, is there something broken with me that I feel like I have to check every single one of these off?
You check off everything under the
Everything on like the left side. I feel like I can check all of the, not all at once, but I feel like I have checked them all.
No, that's why it's written that way.
Yeah.
No, in fact, I think it just speaks to greater emotional intelligence because you have some new ones.
Mm-hmm. The one that really stood out to me was the predicting, the prognosticating trades. I actually had to make a note of it in my journal today because I found myself trying to predict losses on trades I wasn't even taking. And I felt like that was actually stemming from a place of fear.
Yeah. Yeah. And is that such a problem? Maybe, but you got to understand, like, maybe you prognosticate when the market conditions aren't great.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, maybe you prognosticate and chop. Mm-hmm. And if you do, prognosticate away, baby. You know, like,
right.
What's the problem? And so again, that's that. And this is where, so I mentioned functionality, functional analysis. Now there's contextual analysis. You know, what context is this happening in?
Mm-hmm.
And that takes some paying attention, you know thyself, right? So, you know, if the context is chop or whatever, maybe it's useful. Or,
right.
You know, part of my model includes, you know, in the morning, kind of going through a checklist of things that are potential life stressors, just to make sure you're paying attention to everything. And, you know, those things might come into play and be playing a role in fear as well. So, you know, where the fear comes from, I believe you, that was the part of what you were first saying, is like where fear mm-hmm. comes from.
I think it, from in this, if you're asking, I'm sorry, yeah. Didn't mean to interrupt. Yeah, no, if you're asking in this specific instance, I think it was just like you said, it was kind of a choppy day. Like, it wasn't the perfect mm-hmm. setup that I like to see. It was good enough to put an entry on, but then I was able to, I think I reacted correctly to it. I think it was there trying to warn me and caution me, and I think I heeded it like I should. I don't feel like it was like that fight or freeze, or, you know what I mean?
Yes, yes. That's pragmatism and acceptance.
Right.
And fear helps with pragmatism and acceptance. It's not all this big bad monster. There's so many smart people out there that I see talking about fear. I'm just like, wow, I can't believe, you know, just
it's almost people like they're afraid of fear.
Yeah, they're afraid of fear. I mean, fear of fear, that's called panic. But anyways, you know, fear of fear is definitely a thing. You know, intense fear of fear is called panic. But, you know, it's also just the misunderstanding, the only understanding, like the really punch you in the face, painfully obvious, low-hanging fruit. Right. Of the problems with fear. That's what mostly you hear people talking about. And I think it causes more harm than good. If you don't, mm-hmm. if you're getting half the information, I mean, it's like, you know, remove all the red candles on a chart. Is that chart as useful?
No.
You know, why are we eliminating half of the data that we're taking in by saying don't have fear? It's, it's one of the most common errors, or, you know, ignorance, I guess just ignorance, that I see out there in the FinTwit world, amongst both, you know, some, actually, no, I'm not going to go there. Fuck that.
I think new cutting edge psychology says,
yes, thank you. Fear is just, it's just data.
Yeah.
You know, and how we work with that data is how we work with that data. The same way you work with, you know, the data you get from your TPO, your footprint, your candlesticks, your options flow, your whatever. I've never touched bonds. Whatever.
So how much of
just data,
how much of fear is, I guess, I don't know if that's the right term. Like something interesting that I noticed, and I don't know if there's maybe something to this or not, but this, go on a trip with me here. This might be a little bit of a roundabout one. Okay. Here, but I was having some issues with like sensitivity on one of my teeth when I was brushing it. I was feeling pain every time I brushed my teeth. And it got to the point where I was getting like afraid to brush my teeth because I was afraid of the fear that was, or the pain that I was going to be experiencing. But the way I got past that was I actually stopped and like almost tried to like feel the pain instead of letting it, instead of like trying to interpret what it was going to be. It was almost like, let me just stop and listen and see what I'm actually feeling. Can I, like almost surgically, like as a doctor, can I describe it? Where is it? How intense is it? Does it come in waves? And when I kind of looked at it clinically like that, then the fear was gone and even the pain was gone. Like it didn't really actually hurt anymore at that point. So I guess how much of fear is like in our minds about like what we're anticipating the result to be versus what actually is going to happen?
Well, so that's kind of two questions, I think.
Yeah. If this is too much aside, then we can cut that.
No. Okay. I think it's a good question. I think it's kind of two. Like, so to your first point, in the toothbrushing example, the process you're describing, there's two major processes that I saw. One was willingness and one was acceptance.
Okay.
And that was to end the first process, which was avoidance, which did come from fear.
Yes. Yes.
You know, fear has a predictive nature, and that's part of the function of fear. Oh, I've seen, you know, lions drinking water down by this pond. I'm not going there.
Right.
Or, you know, I watched Bambi get yanked in the river by an alligator over there. I'm not going to go over there and drink water. You know, you need that predictive nature of fear. The problem is when the predictive nature is like, you know, it's World War III. Oh, my God. You know, all the, I mean, just this past weekend was such a great example of nonsense. And that's also called memory tagging, is what one of the functions of fear. Mm. And it makes memories stick so that you remember the helpful things, like the examples I just gave. And obviously the downside is that five-figure, six-figure, whatever, that big-ass loss you had out there, folks, that is also going to memory tag, and that's going to be a problem.
Right.
Memory tagging doesn't discriminate, unfortunately.
So now every time you're in a situation that kind of reminds you of that big loss, you're going to pull up all the same feelings and remember that?
That's pretty much. And you're not going to have, and it doesn't mean you have to consciously think of it either. It can just be one little piece of the memory, which memories are comprised of anything that comes in through the senses. So sight, sound, taste, touch, smell, I mean, that can activate the memory. So you really don't know where it's coming from. And it can be problematic. Now, the last part of your question, can you say that to me again?
I guess the question is like, how much of fear is just based on what we've built up in our minds about what we think the outcome is going to be? Like projection almost, I guess.
Yes. So that's why I mentioned the predictive quality of fear. And that's the more problematic part, or can be the more problematic part in this, right? The helpful side of it is, you know, we'll start there because there's plenty of it. Fear is why you put in stops.
Mm-hmm.
Fear is why you got your brackets for you futures traders. You know, fear is your
daily loss,
your bottom line, daily loss limit. Thank you. You know, your maximum, you know, drawdown on an option or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, it needs to be there. And you need to know consciously that is fear. And that's going to work on that relationship with that sort of annoying friend. Maybe he's not so bad. Maybe we'll call him this weekend. That relationship is changing, you know?
Tell you what, it makes a shitty dip.
Let me tell you, buddy, I make a mean roasted red pepper hummus, okay? for the record out there. But and to your point, we also can, you know, see the worst. And to your point, it can also be a big problem. It can mm-hmm. help you, you know, catastrophize, you know, make right. a catastrophe, predict something bad in the future, and you know, it stops you from, you know, trading effectively or whatever. So remember, fear is also a form of anxiety. It has a big overlap, at least in a Venn diagram with anxiety. So what you're talking about, and the most straightforward example or explanation of what worry is the key component, the dominating, you know, characteristic of anxiety.
Right.
Worry is you make up a scenario about the future. You know, what happens when, you know, my parent passes? What happens when that bill comes due? What happens when we bomb Iran? What happens, whatever? And we make up a scenario in our head. Oil's going to rip. So-and-so is not going to like me. I'm not going to do well. Whatever. We make up that scenario and we become distressed by that thing we've made up.
Right.
And it affects our health, our anxiety, our stress, our stomach, or whatever. And that's called apprehensive expectation. And that's the, you know, the root of worry and anxiety. And then, so we'll recontextualize a little bit for fear. You know, it's the same thing. It's, oh shit, this is going to happen. You know, this is black swan. We're going down, whatever. Or, you know, just like, oh, I'm going to blow this account, or, you know, this, you prop traders are like, you know, oh, I'm going to, you know, undo my good work or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. You know, we also make up that story about the future, believe it, and then get upset about it. So all of these things we've mentioned up to this point will help with that as well, because you're changing your relationship with fear is also working on your relationship with anxiety. And yes, you've got anxiety. Everyone out there listening, whether you like it or not, you do. Again, it's why you're alive.
I used to think I wasn't much of a worrier, but I think trading has exacerbated it, or at least brought out a place where that worrying can excel.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. Right? It is fertile ground.
Right.
It's fertile ground for our issues. It just is. I mean, it is lush black soil, and we've got the best, you know, seeds, and they're germinated and rolling. I mean, it's just.
So talk to me then about, there's a very familiar scenario you just walked through about creating a situation in your mind and then suddenly getting distressed about this hypothetical that hasn't even happened mm-hmm. yet. Right. So how do you interrupt that cycle? Like, how do you, I don't want to say like stop it or control it, but like, what's the takeaway from that? Like, how do you react in that moment when you catch that? How do you build an awareness of that? Like, you know, what's the right term here to use?
I like awareness. What you do is you add to it.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to change any relationship with your emotion, you need to add to the experience. And adding to the experience could be attention, like mindful attention. Adding to the experience can be some of the things we've discussed, like, you know, that visualization of like what that side of you looks like, or that metaphor about the friend.
Mm-hmm.
You need to paint that picture. And, you know, the primary tool that I like to use and teach people about and practice with them and is called diffusion or disentanglement. And, you know, mm-hmm. or we get these thoughts and we take them as facts.
Yeah.
And, you know, thoughts are not facts. They are thoughts. Even if you think about a fact, it's still a thought. you know, it is a neurobiological process in your brain. So you can add any of those things we've talked about, or you can add just things like, you know, I'm noticing my mind is telling me again that I'm going to blow this. I'm noticing I'm noticing the thoughts that I suck. Mm-hmm. Or whatever. And, you know, learning by addition is how we learn our whole lives. psychology made a huge mistake that's important to know about mm-hmm. in the 70s, where they kind of reinforced this concept where they wanted to help people change the thoughts by fighting them. And, you know, that doesn't work so well. It has some short-term effectiveness, and long-term, it makes things worse. It actually enhances the strength of the thought and creates more neural ties, meaning there's now there'll be even more triggers, and even like positive thoughts that you try to challenge it with, like, you know, if you have the thought I'm a bad trader, and you know I'm a good trader, and I have here's 10 examples, and I'm gonna read them off.
Can I walk you through the example that I did? Just let me know if this is the right track, because it gets really tricky with some of these. But
yes.
One of the thoughts that I challenge, I don't know if challenge is the right word, but I ended up using I think the term you use is self-compassion.
Yeah.
So it was, I am afraid right now, but I'm working on it, or, but I'm
great
improving, or yeah, something along those lines. I don't know if that's the exact thought, but it was something along those lines. Like, yeah, this is what it is now, but I am working, or I'm taking steps to address this, or I'm taking steps to build awareness, or something like that.
One suggestion mm-hmm. I would make on that is not just semantics, it might sound like it, but change the but to an and.
That was what I wanted to ask about specifically, the but.
There you go.
So I think that's actually hilarious you brought that up.
it's really key.
Yeah, yeah.
People aren't used to thinking that. They're not used to thinking or, you know, experiencing things in a way where they're like, oh, you know, I had a shitty day, but at least, you know.
Yeah, when you say that, it feels like they're not working together. It's like one is fighting the other one. It's
adversarial. Yeah.
And that, yes. Thank you.
It also creates neural links with both sides of that adversarial mm-hmm. relationship. So it starts to activate the other one. So it would be, you know, something like I'm noticing the thought that I'm a bad trader, and I'm using diffusion to work on it right now. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to, you know, practice being nicer to myself, whatever. That's all adding to. Mm-hmm. It's not taking away, it's not fighting, it's adding to. And in fact, that thought theoretically you could have that thought every 5 minutes till the day you die. But if you're diffused from it, it really won't matter that much because it's just, you know, this, you know, and you know, when you change that relationship with fear, you know, fear is just a passing phenomenon. You know, that fear, mm-hmm. you know, that's all got us all wound up tight, and it can become that light.
Yeah. I'd say any of the thoughts that you have that cause any of that stress or anxiety, almost all of them are passing. Even just the act of, like you said, like taking that moment to say, I'm noticing this thought. Like, I feel like just having that thought in my head, I'm noticing the thought, that is enough to like take me out of whatever that emotional response reaction loop that I'm stuck in.
Yeah. You take that time, you breathe. You know, you maybe say one of those diffusion type thoughts I mentioned. And eventually, as they say, if you meditate long enough on the river bank, the bodies of your enemies will float by. Nice. In this case, that would be, I guess, your demons.
Right. So one of the running themes, I think, is going to be throughout this series is probably going to be befriending each of these different emotions.
Yes.
So what are some things that we can do to try to like befriend fear? How can we try to make him more of a, I guess, an ally as opposed to an adversary?
Well, I guess a first place, well, mindfulness is the first place to start with everything.
Yep.
It's really difficult to do this work without having an ability to observe yourself in a particular kind of way. And that's what mindfulness will do. So there's that, which is super important.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that in terms of trading, you know, you can list your greatest, your bigger fears related to trading and rank them,
mm-hmm.
And arrange them in a way, you know, like, you know, least scary first, all the way up to the worst. And, you know, whatever they are, depending on what they are, you can kind of gradually expose yourself to them. You know, you can gradually, you know, let yourself experience them, as we were talking about earlier, like, you know, feeling them is the way that they're going to change. So
what if it's spiders? What if I'm afraid of spiders?
Are you literally? You're asking about phobias? No, I'm
literally afraid of spiders. I don't know if feeling them is going to be something I want to do.
So not that well. Not feeling well. Okay, we're talking about.
That's probably more of a phobia, actually.
Phobias are yeah. completely different.
Yeah. Okay. Thing. Completely different. All right. Sorry, I didn't mean to derail you there.
No, that's fine. Okay, what did I say? Mindfulness. Oh, the ranking of stuff.
Yeah.
Because, you know, first of all, sitting down and doing it is working on the relationship you have with those things. And ranking them is some acceptance of like, okay, mm-hmm. this one's really bad. This one's not so bad. You know, those work.
What do you mean by that? The acceptance like that? What do you mean by this is so bad and this one's not so bad?
Because if you're ranking them in order of how strong they are,
yeah.
you know, the whatever's number 10 on that scale, like the most scary is going to feel a lot different than whatever number one on that scale.
Right. Okay.
Less scary. So by doing the exercise, there's an acceptance of these are I have fears. I'm willing to write them down and, you know, not be a big baby and avoid them anymore.
Just the act of writing them down is a form of confronting them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Ranking them, yeah. having to think about them and compare them to each other. You know, those are all a piece of the puzzle. Kind of what you were saying earlier, like the emotion wheel,
mm-hmm.
you know, do some research on fear, you know, read about its evolutionary, history, I think is a good thing to know. Like, they call it psychoeducation in my business, but you know, that kind of stuff is a decent intervention for anxiety is just education. It's really important because anxiety is a complicated thing.
That's such a great idea. I mean, how many things seem like magic? And I think there's actually a famous quote, right? There's any technology sufficiently advanced is indistinguishable from magic.
Yeah.
I think that's a great idea.
Yeah. All of that, you know, adds to the process of acceptance. Remember, you know, journaling fear.
Yeah.
I also, you know, I use a system intraday where if I'm trading a whole market day about five times, there'll be a reminder that pops in front of me that has me checking, you know, my level of emotionality. I use a scale of -5 to +5.
Yours is the feel score, correct?
Feel score. Yeah. It's out there. I've tweeted copies of it and stuff.
Those are listen to the stuff I did with Rich. It's, I think the scale is similar to the set scores that Rich uses.
Okay. So, you know, if you're down in the negatives, you got to figure out what that is. And the act of rank of reading it, quantifying it, some people find it pretty frustrating and challenging and it is, but you know, suck it up. So is trading.
I think that's just our perfectionist nature. I'm speaking for myself because I hate trying to figure out how to rank those. Cause you put a number down. It's like, is it right? I don't know. I want to be right.
Now, remember the scale that I based the feel scale on is something called the subjective units of distress scales.
Yes.
So it doesn't matter. It is subjective to you. You know, and you say an 8, I say an 8, they probably mean completely different things,
right?
But it doesn't matter because, you know, it's about what's going on inside our skin and how we interpret it. So, that works on that relationship with fear or whatever, because again, you're paying attention to it. And for me, if I'm on that scale, if I'm outside the range of -3 to +3, I do not take trades. And if I realize it when I'm in a trade, I cut it mm-hmm. or at least move the stop and, you know, or I cut and leave a runner. Like I do something to reduce the risk because, you know, an activated sympathetic nervous system, AKA fight, flight or freeze, increases risk exponentially. It doesn't matter how talented you are, you're a human, and now you're in fight, flight, or freeze. So you're a little less human. You're a little more monkey.
That's a good way to word it.
Yeah.
Getting close to, I think, the point where we can start getting to the end here. So if you wanted to, I think, touch on some things that people can do, or maybe some mechanisms or tools that they can use if they find themselves in a extreme fear moment.
Yeah. So if you're on that scale, for example, if you're in an extreme fear moment, you better not be trading.
Right.
You better be dumping a trade. And if you don't, you know, and you've already gone too far, you're not paying attention. You're not, like I said earlier, you're not learning how to notice when that part of you is walking in the room through paying attention to what's going on inside your skin, through education, through mindfulness, for all those things. So that's a big one. But if you do catch yourself with intense fear, you do grounding exercises, Google it. I'm not talking about the grounding where you walk around barefoot or hugging trees. If you're into that, cool. But it is a form of, it's a very specific type of mindfulness where it focuses you on the present moment, but gets you outside of your head. Mindfulness is a very internal thing. You want to know what's going on inside your skin. Grounding gets you outside of your skin for short-term relief. You know, you can't keep doing anything too far outside that range of those threes, whether it's a good feeling or a bad feeling. We're sticking with fear, so we're sticking with bad feelings, but you know, or at least unwanted feelings is a more accurate way to put it. So, you know, that is the best way. Tactical breathing, box breathing, Google that. There's actually GIFs out there, GIFs, whatever you call them, that just do it. Like, it gives you a little visual to follow, but it's what it sounds like. It's, you know, you breathe in for 5 seconds, 7 seconds, whatever fills your lungs. You hold your breath for an equal amount of time. You exhale for an equal amount of time, which means you're going to be pacing your exhale, and you hold the breath again. So, you know, that's kind of a square or tactical breathing. Yeah. And if you are a tough guy out there and you're rolling your eyes, Navy SEALs do it when they're in cold water situations and they're trying to, you know, not lose their shit.
It works. There's something primeval about that it triggers something. It's quite impressive how well that works.
It's wild.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. So we've gone through kind of how to befriend fear. We've gone through how to deal with crippling fear in the moment. Gone through how to identify fear. Is there anything else that you want to touch on relating to fear?
Yes. I think that it's important to understand fear's roots, you know, the survival roots, the memory tagging, how, you know, primal and built in it is, and how it can, you know, impair cognition and create anxiety and all kinds of things. But also that, you know, you will grow by integrating more into your fear. And as in those examples I gave, integrating mindfulness into your fear, awareness into your fear, acceptance, willingness, it will grow. It will activate the, people like to talk about neuroplasticity again now, 35 years after we discovered it. And, you know, it's very neuroplastic. It works quite well. You can do a lot of rewiring through practices like that, through, integrating. So, you know, you don't want to eliminate fear. You want to befriend and integrate it. And, I think that's, and you want it to be a signal. It's data.
Oh, fear's coming in. Why? Hey, what are you doing here, fear?
Don't ignore it. Don't crush it because you're so manly or whatever. Because actually, it's quite the opposite. You're running like a coward. But anyways, you know, roll with it.
Yeah.
You want to change those behaviors. You want to trade differently. Act differently.
Right. John, if somebody wanted to learn more about the fear response, kind of like more of the biomechanics of how that works, like where would be a good resource for that?
The question is, where can they learn more about it?
Yeah, just a good book that explains kind of more of the mechanism, like if you want to understand like how it works and maybe the evolutionary history of it.
The Body Keeps the Score.
Ah, okay. Who wrote that?
Bessel van der Kolk.
That's probably going to do it for today's episode. So if you're listening around the live audience, please stick around because we're going to go straight into the Q&A portion after this. If you're listening to the broadcast, you're probably going to have to wait a couple weeks. And if that's too long, you can always DM Sean or myself, get you access to participate in these live recordings. Visit soundperformancepsychology.com on your way out. Let Sean know you're ready to level up your trading endgame. Be back soon with more emotions to scrutinize. But until that day, like, share, subscribe to all the things and have a green week. This recording keep going. I see some stuff in the chat. Did we get any questions dropped in here?
Nice job, dude. I don't know. I was staying away from it so I didn't get distracted.
Oh man, I'm sorry, guys.
I'm so easily distracted.
People were having some issues with the volume. Oh no.
Shut up, really?
Okay, only one guy.
Volume was fine for Denny.
Okay, good.
It's someone being a boomer.
Yep.
Denny knows what he's doing.
Oh, it was Carlos. Yeah, Carlos, I'll set you up with the
Carlos, what's up, buddy? I haven't seen you in a minute.
All right, we got any questions, guys? Let them chat or drop here. If anybody wants to pop up and talk to, let me know, because I want to do a screen share so I can try to capture the words that they're saying. Boomerang.
Who's in the body?
Where was my questions?
Omar, so I did get studying Caesar. Okay.
I think the I think the questions that I got were probably more along, like, someone was asking about like specifically prop firms and like how they kind of market to you based on trading edge. Just curious about your take on that. And then somebody else was, oh?
No, I'm not ready to bash prop firms yet publicly.
Okay. And then the other one was a tweet from Jester Trading. He says that the need to focus on trading psychology is the degree to which you rely on discretion in your trading. It's just curious what your thoughts are on that statement.
So I would say, perhaps you're right. It's a incredibly specific thing, you know, for each individual. The vast majority of us are discretionary traders. Most of us are not quants. Most of us aren't autists or, you know, computer science, whatever, you know, cracking, doing the exact trade over and over again. But do you, man, whoever, asked that question, if that works, do it. Don't worry about it, and don't worry about what we're doing. We'll see who's the liquidity.
Right. I like that. Okay. I got a question for you. This is something that, I've found myself, or something that I've talked about in the past, and I'm curious if this is a good idea, bad idea. In the past, I have committed to taking scary trades, quote unquote, like to try to help me get over the fear of taking those trades. I'm going to commit to taking one of those a day to try to, I guess, I don't know, like you said, expose myself to it almost, maybe try to numb myself to that fear. I don't know. Is that a good idea or bad idea?
That's tricky. It's going to depend on the person.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things about this whole episode, which I actually meant to mention, but you know,
we're still recording.
Okay. A part of what we're talking about today, this fear, I'm going to talk about it in a relatively broad way, because mm-hmm. where your fear comes from is going to be very different. You know, your FOMO isn't different than my FOMO. My F is different than your F.
Right. Right.
So I'm going to answer it. I'm going to keep today and all these answers as much as I can in the context of that neurobiological, psychological processes that are going on intraday mm-hmm. for all of us. So, you know, what triggered it is going to be very different based on our lives, based on our experiences, based on our hardwiring. So that question that you just asked, you got to repeat it again. I'm so sorry.
The idea of committing yourself to taking a scary trade, is it a good idea or bad idea to try to confront the fear that way?
You know, it wouldn't be, I mean, if it's high, is it high risk or is it just scary?
It's just scary. It's.
Then sure. I just size down.
Yeah. 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 And, not, you know, like out risk. Yeah. Definitely not like.
Yeah. Just size down and, you know, along the lines of what I was saying before about making the list of fears and working your way up, mm-hmm. size down, you know, start with a micro, do the same trade with two micros, you know, do that, right. You know, do one micro all week for, you know, the next week, do two. If you're still anxious, do two for 2 weeks, then bring in the third, you know, but give yourself some time in between, let yourself adjust. You know, when you do exposures, what you want to do is you want to be exposed to the thing that is giving you stress or anxiety or whatever. And you want to regulate yourself while you are exposed to it. So you take that trade, then, you know, do grounding, mm-hmm. You know, make sure, you know, you're as close to a zero on the feel scale as you can before that trade. And then, you know, put yourself in it. It's going to dysregulate your feels to some degree, obviously, but that's why you're de-risked. And that can work for people. I wouldn't say everyone go out there and do that, but it's you know yourself, you know, really what it comes down to is can you trust yourself to do it in a low scale way?
Right, right.
Way it's not gonna mess with your account. So that's what I would say is the biggest determining factor, is if you could trust yourself.
I mean, I was doing it with a prop firm in this situation, so
yeah.
Let's see, we got Denny. Are you referring to the phenomena that sometimes the best entries are the most uncomfortable? because he feels that often. I think I was just getting to the point, Denny, that any entry became very, very scary. So really, I was just becoming afraid to even trade my plan altogether. But yeah, I do agree that sometimes, those scary entries tend to be. That was kind of, I think, why I was leaning into that a little bit more. But the reason why I was asking. Go ahead. The reason why I was asking this is because I've said a lot of things on this program doing this for 5 years. And ever since I've been talking to Sean, I've been a lot more cognizant of not wanting to put bad information out there. So, I want to make sure that what I've been saying is not wrong.
it's tricky.
Yeah.
You know, I've said it before. You know, because we all have the human condition, it's easy for any of us to really get a little too cocky with our psychological knowledge. I mean, I'm a therapist, and I can't be objective with myself. I can't be objective with someone that I love. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it's like this common experience, and then now there's all this whatever TikTok psychology, and just there's, you know, there's nonsense there. There's nonsense on FinTwit. There's a lot of stuff like that. So now, you know, there's even more. Wait, hang on a second. What the fuck was I going to say?
Something on the bite-sized education on TikTok.
Yes. Oh, yeah. No, hang on. I'll back up. Just the relatability. So everyone has the human condition. Mm-hmm. So everyone certainly has an opinion on psychology as they should, and that's part of being a human. But, you know, because of the phenomenon of, like, Americans having, you know, scoring, you know, horribly on tests, but having the highest confidence on the test that they score so low on. That's an American thing. You know, we kind of have that tendency cycle. It's Mount Stupid in terms of Dunning-Kruger effect.
Dunning-Kruger, but, yeah.
it's the Mount Stupid phase of Dunning-Kruger. But because it's so universal, I would think about it like this. You know, everyone out there has had diarrhea.
It's still funny.
Just because you've diagnosed yourself with diarrhea and deemed the best intervention to be Pepto-Bismol, and the outcome is diarrhea goes away, does not make you a gastroenterologist. And that is the logic that I see all over the place, social media. And it's freaking absurd and arrogant and delusional and fucking ridiculous. Anyway, no. And that where you want, Laura.
Okay. Here's another good question then. You mentioned the fear being like where it comes from. Are you specifically referencing like lower or higher in the chest, like that portion? Or are you talking about the specific thing that's causing the fear, the issue, or yes. Schema?
The issue, the schema, the life experience, the trauma, whatever.
Okay. So
that's a good question.
Yeah. Why do you feel the need to differentiate from that? Like, can you give us some examples of?
Well, that what I'm saying is for this recording, I'm not because
Gotcha.
It's got to be broad because everyone's who's listening is going to have different reasons they're fearful. So that's why I kept it in this, you know, this neurobiological kind of template. You just can't be too specific. And that's why, you know, it is helpful to understand yourself or, you know, work with someone that has a clue because they can help you identify that stuff. And it doesn't have to necessarily be trading psychology. I mean, you know, you get a quality therapist, start to learn about yourself, and it's going to take you far.
Yeah. Good stuff. I think we got through most of the questions that we got here, unless somebody has anything else. Give another minute here.
If no one's asked. I know my peoples. Thanks, guys, for listening.
Yeah, thanks, everybody, for jumping in. So, yeah, tell your friends, like it, subscribe, share, all the things.
Appreciate it.
This podcast is intended for informational and educational purposes only, does not constitute financial or investment advice, and should not be construed as such. The hosts, guests, and contributors of this podcast are not licensed financial advisors, brokers, or professionals. Any trading or investment decisions made based on the content of this podcast are solely at the listener's discretion and risk. Trading and investing in financial markets carry inherent risks, and past performance is not indicative of future results. Listeners should conduct their own research and seek advice from qualified financial professionals before making any financial decisions. The views, opinions, and information shared in this podcast are those of the individual contributors and do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the podcast creators or associated organizations. produced by China Shop Productions.